Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is René Jorgensen, and he is a philosopher and research member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. And he has got a new book out in which he shares his personal near-death experience and extensive research that draws parallels to religion, spirituality and science. But I think we're in for a very interesting program. Are you there, René?
Yes, I'm here, Mike. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. Now, something I will ask you just before we get tapped into the program.
Yeah.
I had an email from someone, Jolien. I don't know whether that means anything to you. And he was simply asking a question. Did you work directly with Pim Van Lommel, who was the founding member of IANS? Apparently he's a neurosurgeon.
Yeah, no, I have not worked with him. I know him from the organization, and I've talked to him and interviewed him and discussed with him, but I have not worked with him, no. No, but I know his work. His work is actually groundbreaking in that it's the first prospective study that was set up. Usually the research of near-death experiences are done after the experience, sometimes many years, 10 years, 5 years after, and these testimonies are collected. But he set one up in Holland, Pim Van Lommel, in 10 different hospitals over a period of 13 years, where they actually interviewed people just when they came back from a day or two after having cardiac arrest. And they found that 18% of people who had cardiac arrest and were successfully resuscitated and brought back, they actually had near-death experience. So that's like almost one in five who have a near-death experience.
Right, yes. Well, now, interestingly enough, what is it now, 7 years ago, I had a single bypass, and I don't remember going anywhere at all.
No. No, as I said, it's not everybody. It's I mean, Van Lommel's study found that it was about almost 20%, I mean, one in five who has a near-death experience. And we don't know why some people have and other people don't. It's too wide a phenomena to know those kind of answers. But it doesn't happen to everybody, that's for sure.
No. But
maybe you didn't need one.
Possibly two separate occasions being aware that during my sleep, that I've gone out of the body, but they that control these things, apparently were not prepared to allow me to know anything beyond the fact that I went out of the body. Yet it is claimed, and you may agree with this, that during sleep, nearly everybody does go out of the body.
You're asking if everybody do leave their body. Not everybody. It occurs quite often. It is very normal that people leave their body, actually.
Yes.
And actually, that's it's one of the elements in the near-death experience that people leave their body and are able to see themselves from the outside. And that's really one of the, you could say, one of the phenomena that makes the experience quite unique, because it's, when you leave the body, you enter, like, it's another dimension. It's another it's another world, in that sense.
Yes. I think the most consistent story I've read about that type of thing is where people doing an operation actually find themselves above their body watching what is taking place. They don't appear to go out of the building, and maybe that's because they don't believe it's possible. But I must say, that seems to happen quite frequently.
Yes, it's true, it's true. And actually, what's really interesting is there's a lot of research done on what's called veridical perception. What's really interesting is that people, while they're outside the bodies, when they come back, they're actually able to explain what instruments were used during the operation, or they will be able to recognize things in the room that were actually only there during the operation, or they will even be able to repeat conversations between the doctor and the nurse during the operation where they were actually totally, you know, passed out. So it's really interesting, these testimonies where people come back and describe what they see outside the body.
Absolutely, and that sort of evidence for me is very hard to dispute. You would have to be, I think, an out-and-out skeptic to try and find some other answer to that one.
It is one we
should Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, it is one of the strong evidence because, of course, the skeptics, the people who are skeptic about the near-death experience, they try to claim that the experience happens just when people fall in and out of consciousness. But because we have these testimonies where people are able to see what goes on during the operation, and many of these operations, people are actually they're flatlined, and there are some cases where their brain waves are totally flat. That means that the EEG measurement is totally flat, and that means that there is consciousness. This really strongly suggests that there's consciousness outside the brain.
Right. Yes. Now, I think we ought to, having opened the program in that way, ask you exactly what was your near-death experience that started this all for you.
Well, I was not literally near physical death. I had what's called an ego-death experience in which I left my body. And from outside my body, or I should say when I left the body, I entered what's usually called the light. It's very difficult to describe because it's another dimension. It's like it's just an experience of infinite love beyond comprehension. I usually tell people to try to remember the moment when you felt the most love here on Earth. Then you would have to multiply that feeling at least 100 times, if not 1,000 times, to get a grip on how it feels to enter the light. And then after I met this light, I had what's called a life review. I went through the episodes of my life, and I actually had what's also called a distressing or negative life review. I went through all the episodes in my life where I had hurt other people. This would be like an ex-girlfriend, or I would be angry at my mother. Even episodes in high school I had forgotten came up during my life review. Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, so and then after this life review, I came back and I also had what's called a preview into the future. I would kind of see myself change my life, transform my life, and I would see myself being a more loving person and having a more positive and compassionate life after my experience. And so my experience was very deeply transformational, you could say.
Right. Are you saying that you had some sort of choice as to whether you came back from that?
No, I didn't have a choice. Actually, we do find that, but I should say, my experience, I didn't meet any relatives or any beings of light or any religious figure at all. It was kind of a formless experience. I experienced my experience more like being in a dimension of light, a dimension of energy. There was no forms as such in it. It was like, in a way, formless. But we do hear in many testimonies where people meet, they will meet relatives, or they will meet light beings or angels and stuff like this. They actually, many times they are given the choice to go back, or they're told that they have to go back because their work is not over, and, you know, they have to go back to the body. So this happens a lot often, yes. Yes, you're right.
Yes. So how much did that experience alter your life at that point?
Well, I should say the first year after my experience, three, four months after, I was actually very confused because I should say I was an atheist before. And I guess I didn't believe in God or anything. I was always saying, if God is real, then show me the proof, right?
And you got it.
I got the proof, and the irony is that when I finally got the proof was too much for me to handle. I mean, literally, because I was an atheist and I rejected anything immaterial, I couldn't handle my experience in a way because I couldn't understand it. It was too big. So I was overwhelmed by it, and I went through psychotherapy to kind of get grounded again and to kind of learn to interpret my experience and find my foothold in the world again, because it is a very, very powerful experience, and many people who come back, and that's why the International Association of Near-Death Studies, where I'm a member, we also have groups set up in many countries and many states where they act as support groups where you can come and talk to other people who have the same experience, because it is really, if you cannot, you know, there's nobody who can really understand your experience unless they've had it themselves. So it's really good to have this support where you can talk to other people and share your experience. That's a big help too.
So yes. So the association that you belong to Do they share their own findings with each other? Is it to further your own understanding?
Yes, each year there is a big conference. There's an annual conference where all the new research is presented, and people can keep up with what's going on. But you can say there are two aims. The sort of scientific aim is that there are a lot of scientists who are interested in this phenomenon. Some want to prove that the experience is real, and some are really trying to prove that there is life after death. So they're really doing. They're setting up research now in hospitals where, for instance, Pemba and Loma, where they're trying to get the final proof that there's really life after death, or at least that these people do leave the body and can relate stories and describe what they see outside. That's the one side. The other side is that there are also some who are interested in because they want to disprove it, because of course there's a lot of skepticism within science about this phenomenon, because it doesn't quite fit our classical paradigm, you could say. So there's a lot of skepticism there too.
Yes, right. So in your experience on that, would you say that science is actually out of touch with the reality of life after death?
Yes, definitely. I think if we look at especially classical science, I mean, for me, it's kind of an outdated paradigm. I mean, classical science is very materialistic. The only thing real is what we can touch or measure. And that really leaves out a big space, because as we know in science today that matter, everything in the universe that we see as matter, it only accounts for 4% of the universe. The rest of the universe, all the black out there, is what they call dark energy and dark matter. It accounts for 96% of the universe. And that's really unknown material. We don't know what it is. So I think really that materialism is really, really coming to an end, this paradigm. And this, I think, we see in quantum physics, where we actually, there are theories of extra dimensions, which actually describe these dimensions in a way that the near-death experience also experience. And they're actually building big experiments trying to prove that these extra dimensions actually do exist. So there's, I think, in new science, especially in the field of quantum physics, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening that I'm very comfortable. I feel some big breakthroughs are going to happen there in the future.
Yeah, I've seen it claimed a number of times, and in fact, it's been given in the form of messages to us from channeled sources that eventually science and religion, and therefore spiritual understanding, would come closer together. Have you seen that happen in your time studying near death?
Yes. I think that quantum physics is that unity of science and religion. Because, as I talked about before, the proof of extra dimensions, of course, really opens up to the immaterial universe. But also, for instance, there's another thing called quantum entanglement.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
Okay, quantum entanglement. It's also called non-locality. What it is, there are some experiments done in the 80s where what they do, they take two particles and separate them by 11 kilometers. And then when they change the spinning direction of one, instantly the other particle, which is at the other end at 11 kilometers, it changes also. So through these actually real scientific experiments, it is proven that even though two particles are separate in space and time, they're still interconnected. And this, of course, very strongly suggests that there is a oneness between particles, that nothing, even though it looks separate, everything is actually interconnected. Everything is, in essence, one. And this really, this is, if we interpret that and draw parallel to the religion and to spirituality, you could say the basic spiritual experience is this experience of oneness. And that's also what we find in the near-death experience, that there is this oneness, the experience of oneness. And that's also why, and that's also why we have, for instance, we have the life review the negative life review, as if you kind of go against this oneness by hurting others, then there seems to be this kind of consequence of having a life review, because the ultimate lesson seems to be that we have to learn that in a way, in a sense, what religion is teaching us, that the golden rule is a way to live by. We should respect each other because everything is interconnected in that sense.
Yes. Well, certainly oneness figures very highly in the spiritual teachings. You've really touched upon another question that I wanted to ask you, because if people have Christian beliefs, they understand there to be at some stage a judgment day. Now, you're talking of having to look at experiences that you've had where
yes.
you may have hurt someone in any manner. Would you say that is partly an explanation and what they possibly may be referring to without understanding truthfully what it means?
Yes, I think that the life review, and especially the negative, I should say people have both positive life reviews and negative life reviews, I mean, where the content is different. You know, actually, it's only 15% of people who have the near-death experience who have what we call a negative life review. And it's more who have people more regularly have positive life reviews, where they meet the deceased relatives and family members and they see episodes of their life which are really positive and good, but still 15% have these negative or distressing life reviews. Mm-hmm. And because I had one myself, I can truly testify that it does feel in a way like what the dogmatic religion tells us about hell. I mean, it is really, even though burning in a fire would be metaphorically speaking, I would still say that, yes, the pain of having this negative life view could be interpreted as the pain of burning in a way, because as I explained before, the love of this light is 1,000 times stronger than anything we can imagine here on Earth. But also when the pain of this negative life view is also 1,000 times stronger, because you're really in an out-of-body state, you're in another dimension. So it is really... It could really confirm what the religions, and in a way, it's some researchers like Raymond Moody has actually suggested that the near-death experience is actually what has inspired religion to talk about heaven and hell and these things, actually. And I believe that's very possible, because before I had my experience, heaven, hell, and all these concepts had no meaning to me. But when I had my experience, I knew exactly what heaven and hell was in a way.
Yes.
But I should make one point here that's really, really important to make, that the near-death research does not conclude like some religious interpretation and some interpretations of the judgment day in Christianity, that it is a punishment. And in such way, the near-death experience does not tell us that God is angry at all. Basically, the conclusion from all the research is that God, or we could say in the near-death experience, would be equivalent to the light. The light is really love. It's infinite, absolute love beyond comprehension. It does not get angry. It does not hate in any way. But the concept of punishment can be understood from the point of view that if we have lived, like in my life, I had been very selfish and very conceited, and I just hurt other people, and I didn't care for other people. So in a way, because the light, this love, was experienced as the true nature, which is very general, I had been separate. My life has been unaligned with this love. And therefore, as a consequence, not a punishment, but a consequence, I felt the pain. So if there's a lesson for modern-day religion and for the evolution of our understanding of religion, it's definitely this, that from the near-death experience, we don't have evidence of any punishment, and we don't have evidence that God is actually angry at all. It is more man who makes God angry, in my view.
Yeah. So I believe what you're probably hinting at is that, in fact, you're not being judged by anyone else or, say, a God. You're actually making a judgment yourself.
Yes, you are judging yourself, and that's really what people say, that in a way the creation of hell is like a projection. It's your own judgment on yourself. And that really fits my own personal experience, because when I entered this light, this just unbelievable infinite light, I was so overwhelmed by meeting this light that I was like, my God, I was like, wow, I didn't know. It is love. It is all love. And then from this realization, I came to, wow, but I have lived a life not aligned with this love. I had hurt other people. I had been selfish. And through this realization, through this judgment on myself, in a way, I caused this life review, you could say. And this is also, if you, for instance, look at the Greek word for sin. The Greek for sin means to miss the target of the truth. In a way, it means to be blind of the truth. So, in a way, this interpretation fits more with that sin is more ignorance than it is enlightened evil intent. It seems to be more ignorance from this point of view.
Yes.
And that's really an interpretation that fits with the near-death experience, that the light is absolute love. It does not judge.
Yes.
It does not punish in any way. It is your own separation from God that causes this pain, which is then an outcome. It becomes a consequence of the separation, but it's not a punishment of this angry God. That does not fit our testimonies and the research.
No. Now, from the different experiences that you have researched, do you find, generally speaking, that people, when they go out of the body, do often meet a being of some kind, if not, as you pointed out, necessarily someone they know? I mean, do they see a being who they think is Jesus or God or whatever?
Yeah, I should say, basically, people experience God in a very broad sense. It's more like God is like the nature of being, like the ultimate structure of the universe. It's more experienced like this, because we do, of course, find people who meet religious figures, but this seems to be very subjective, because it is a cultural conditioning. For instance, some Christians, and I will say by far not all, it's actually fewer that meets a religious figure such as Jesus.
Yeah.
This we find in the Christian tradition, but there, if you then go cross culture and check other cultures, like, let's say, Hindus or Buddhists or in other cultures, then they don't meet Jesus, so they would meet their religious figure of their tradition. So then you have a conflict. I mean, which one is the real one here, right? And that's really that's the same problem we have with the struggle going on, the competition between the religions.
Yeah.
So what the research here tells us, and is that these meetings seems to be more like projections. So what is generally agreed on is that the near-death experience is a co-created experience. This means that the light, the dimension of the light, it is a very real dimension, but this dimension interacts with the mind of the person or the mentality of the individual who has the experience. So when we leave the body and we enter this light, whatever we bring with us, meaning our cultural conditioning, will then be projected into this dimension. And therefore, we then create meetings with religious figures or with relatives. And I should say that there is, for instance, one interesting study done by Dr. Peter Fendwick. He found that 37% of these people that the near-death experience would meet in the light were still alive. So usually people think that, people who die, they go to heaven and they wait for you. But here in one study, 37% were actually still alive, meaning that they were still on Earth, but they were also in this dimension. So it when you look deeper into the research, it strongly suggests that whoever we meet, it's like a projection that arrives from our cultural heritage and our conditioning, you could say.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. In fact, spiritual messages often say that very thing, that whoever you sort of decide to meet or whatever's built up in your mind, it happens that way. And I guess this is why you often meet a loved one, because if it's something that frightens you in any way, you want to be comforted by thinking that at least you'll meet someone you know and someone who's sort of loving and understanding.
Exactly. That seems to be the explanation of who we meet. I mean, if whenever we're frightened, if we pray to Jesus and then he is our helper, he is our guide, then we will probably manifest him. Or if it's a grandparent or if it's another relative, then we will ask for help here. And that seems to be much more the case. You're exactly correct in that sense.
Yeah.
So I call it... I call this light, this dimension, I call it the light behind God. And what I mean with that is that this light, like I said before, it is a very broad interpretation of God, like as a structure, as the nature of the universe. So in a way, the light is like the source of all our cultural conditioning and all our labels we use. So in a way, it is better for me to use the word source than instead of God or this religious figure or that religious figure. It that for me is more fitting to say it is a meeting with the source, which is experienced as this light, this love, this form of energy in a way. Yes. That seems to be behind whatever we create through labels and concepts and language.
Yes, I totally agree with you there. Again, with your research that you've carried out, have you ever found any cases or many where the people have thought they were dead, but haven't actually moved off the earth, haven't met any of these beings, haven't really gone anywhere at all, but maybe, in fact, have considered themselves to be somehow earthbound?
Exactly. What do you mean? If they didn't leave the body or they didn't have any of the characteristics?
Well, what I mean is they may be have an accident and perhaps be forced out of the body.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe feel that they've died, but they don't actually go on into these other higher realms, and they may seem to be actually earthbound. They don't go anywhere at all, really.
Yes, yes. Well, people go in a way many places. I mean, what's very certain to say is that no experience looks like another experience. I mean, no two are identical.
No.
So some people go into a void of nothingness. Some people go into a darkness. Some people go. I mean, it is very, very, very subjective where people go in a way. So there's no. You can't say a near-death experience is exactly like this. But what is done in the research is that there's an attempt to find the pattern, which is labeled or called core experiences. So there are these typical patterns as leaving the body, meeting the light, having a life review, and coming back. There are certain elements that seem even cross-cultural and that seem universal to the experience. But you're right, it's not everybody who has that specific pattern. It is very subjective, and it's very different from one experience to another, you could say. It's very different.
It's strange in a way, because you actually said that when you had your experience, I think I'm correct in making this interpretation, you didn't actually believe in God. And yet, when you left the body, you actually progressed in a way that might have been consistent with someone who did.
Yes. Well, it's because the thing that's most difficult to understand about the near-death experience is this experience of another dimension. Sometimes I try to explain it that, let's say that we were to explain a small ant. If we were to give all the knowledge we have of the universe, if we were to give that to an ant, in a way, the ant would not be able to handle all this information because, you know, its mind is just not, capable of handling all that information. So in the same way, when you have a near-death experience, it's like you leave the body and you leave the human mind, the human comprehension, and then you experience, in a way, the mind of God. And that is so strong, that is so powerful, that when we have this experience, there is no longer any doubt. There's no longer, you are sure that's what it is. That's what people are talking about when they talk about God, when they talk about heaven, when they talk about hell. You are absolutely convinced because the experience is so extremely powerful that there is no room for doubt. In a way, when you are in this light, in this dimension, it is not a relative experience. You can't have, oh, maybe I believe it, maybe I don't. It's not like the physical dimension, which has doubt. We have up and down, and we have duality, black and white, and wrong and right. But when you have this experience, there is absolutely no doubt at all. You are totally blown away by the sheer power and immensity of the experience, that there is no room left to doubt in after that.
Yes. I recall looking back, I did have one out-of-the-body experience whilst I was asleep. And I believe the intention was to take me into some realm and show me how I died in a previous life. And my conclusion was that I was actually a Union soldier in the American Civil War, and I believe I was shot and I died in a trench. But the being that took me there to show me that seemed to exude such powerful love. I can understand what you mean when you say you can't really describe it, because I said to someone, it's like treacle being poured over you. It's so powerful, and the love was so beautiful. And yes, that accompanied me when I was being shown this scene of where I died. And I guess I couldn't feel angry about it. I couldn't feel anything negative. I was just totally empowered by this loving feeling.
Yes. It's true. It's totally overpowering, totally overwhelming, but beyond comprehension, because it's another dimension. It's like the fifth dimension. It's another dimension that we cannot comprehend, and that's why it's so incredible, so overpowering. And that's why, basically, when people come back, they are unable to explain exactly what happened to them. And that's usually why many people, they then use whatever religious language they have in their culture to explain what happened to them.
Well, that is the difficulty, of course, isn't it? We don't actually have words that can really express what you experience.
Exactly, exactly. That's it. We live in a physical world, in a lower dimension, and therefore we don't have the language, we don't have the knowledge, we don't have the capacity to fully comprehend this phenomena, which the near-death experience really is. It is really an anomaly that is a phenomena that is just beyond our comprehension.
Yes. Now, would you say from your experience that you would believe that life is therefore infinite, that we are immortal?
Well, definitely. I mean, when people are asked after, and my personal belief also is that life continues. And this, when you ask people who have near-death experience, I mean, it's like 9 out of 10, they will say that they are, in a way, convinced that life continues. Because you're in this light, in this other dimension, and it just seems to be more real, and it just seems to be that everything has a meaning, everything is connected, and everything continues. So for sure, I mean, I definitely believe that life is, in a way, eternal. It is eternal in that sense. And that also means that even though I have no experience of reincarnation, that would be a logical thing to conclude, that if life is eternal, well, then it must, in a way, reincarnate in a way. I don't know, my personal view is probably maybe the energy, the soul, the spirit energy is recycled or continues in a way in the universe. That's my personal belief.
Yes. Well, I certainly believe that we are here in a sequence of lives which are connected, and the bottom line is that we're evolving spiritually.
Yes. Yes, that exact conclusion is actually, if you ask in the near-death research, if you ask everybody who has the experience and my personal experience, and if you ask all researchers, there seems to be an agreement that the purpose of life concluded from this experience is that the purpose seems to be to evolve, to grow the soul, to learn how to love, to gain knowledge and grow. That really seems to be the purpose of life in a way that we learn from it. And that also connects to what I talked about, the life review. In the Buddhist tradition, they call the life review, they call it a mirror, the mirror of evolution. So in a way, the reason you have the life review is to see how far did you get. So this life review shows you where you did good things or where you did bad things, or it kind of shows you where you went wrong. So it seems to be like a school, school of the universe that really continues. And that is really the essence, the purpose of life, if you interpret it from in the context of the near-death experience.
Yeah. Well, if you have that understanding, I take your case, obviously. You were thinking on an atheistic line before you had it. When you came back, you were more aware. But it certainly makes you have then a different understanding of your purpose in this lifetime, doesn't it? I mean, the way you look at things that happen to you, other people, takes on a completely different hue, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, because let's say if you don't believe that there's life after death, then in a way, life becomes, usually people, they argue the other way around, that if life continues, then life has no meaning. But in my view, it's opposite. If you only have one life, then there seems to be no meaning, because you're going to die soon, so you better, you know, get greedy and get as much materialism as you can before it's too late, because soon it's over and then it's lost. So let's party now and live up while we have the chance, right? But
absolutely,
if you...
Yeah.
Yes, that's how we live. I mean, see our culture today, in Western culture, that's really how materialism works. It's me, because just right now, right here, I mean, it's very short-term, the view, the perspective is very short-term. But if you obviously have the life that continues, then it opens up to meaning, because then you have to ask yourself, okay, if life continues, then what is the purpose of life then? And then you start to see a longer perspective on life, and then you really truly start to care about the earth. You start to care about humanity. You start to care about the evolution of humankind. You really start to care about the universe, because all of a sudden you are one. You are connected to it in an eternal marriage, in a way, and therefore you have to ask, what do I have? What is my obligation in this marriage? And that, in my belief, is really to help the process of evolution in a positive direction, to help that along. That's what I believe, really.
Yes. So when you had your review and you saw both the positive and negative aspects of your life, did you feel at any stage that what you had experienced was actually put in place for that specific reason? In other words, it's not purely coincidence, it's not coming out of a chaotic conditions, it is sort of an orderly life.
You mean if the life review, please repeat that again?
Well, did you feel when you had your life review, because you reviewed both the positive things and the negative things, did it give you the impression that what you had experienced up to that time was absolutely intended and wasn't, shall we say, in any way coincidental? But, you know, that was the purpose of your life even before you understood it.
Yes, very much. Actually, if you look at the events leading up to my experience, everything that happened was kind of, in a way, too coincidental. It was like almost like it was destiny, like I was really supposed to have that experience on that day. So when I look at it, it's really like I was supposed to be born where I was, and I was supposed to be selfish and, you know, narcissistic and atheist. Then I was also supposed to one day really get a powerful wake-up call. I mean, basically, I was asleep, and God took me and shook me up and said, hey, Rene, wake up. And it really does seem everything leading up to it in my life all of a sudden start to give meaning and have sense in a way. Yes, so it does really... Yeah. It does really seem that there is a purpose, and that there also is, in a way, a destiny, in my view.
Yes.
Yes,
so I can sort of relate to that in the sense that in my early life as an adult, I went from having a certain belief in religious teachings, then sort of tended to drift away from them, and then for other reasons believed that it was better to be an atheist. I sort of went through different patterns of trying different things.
Yes.
But then I had an experience when my first wife died after 2 years of marriage, and she died through an illness. And I so much wanted to help other people, I thought I would like to get into healing and things like that. And although I didn't realize it then, but looking back, that really put me on the path that has led to the experiences I've had in my life right up to now.
Yes.
It took an event of that magnitude to, as you might say, wake me up.
Yes. That
parallels your own. Now, we've obviously touched upon the fact that people do fear death. What comfort could you give them if they are still doubtful and need a bit of help on that one?
Well, I would definitely say that the near-death research, I mean, it actually proves, even scientifically, that consciousness does seem to exist outside the brain and therefore outside the body also. Even if we don't accept all the conclusion of the near-death research, we at least have to accept the conclusion that consciousness exists beyond the brain. And, of course, the conclusion that near-death experiences then do is that because they have this very strong conviction that life continues, then all of a sudden we don't need to fear death anymore. Because if you look at, I think fear and ignorance are really two of the, you could say, negative patterns, negative elements that hold us back, that hold back the evolution of the spirit. But when you look at the root of fear, it is really grounded in, you know, we have this social Darwinism, survival of the fittest. And what I believe is that that introduces a kind of fear where everybody is in fear of survival, fear of losing their job, fear of how are we going to have money. And, you know, there's all this fear going on, which is really rooted in a way in this fear of survival, which is in essence the fear of dying. And when we look at the near-death experience that people tell us, everybody tell us that in essence this experience is really the experience of infinite love beyond human comprehension. It is experienced as love is the true nature of the universe. It's really, if you peel away all the research, all the data and everything, then what you have left from these testimonies, and these are really thousands of testimonies, is that the essence is of this experience is love. And that's really what we are told, and that's really the evidence suggests that when we die, we return to, it's often called a homecoming. We return to ourselves, to our true nature. We become one with God, and it is just a profoundly experience that is just, it's too difficult to describe, but it is so extremely positive. It is so incredible that there is really, in a way, nothing to fear.
Well, the spiritual teachings generally tell us that the life we're in now here on Earth is, in that sense, an illusion, because it's not the real us, if you like.
And yes.
I believe it might be a correct thing to say that
yes.
when you go over to the other side, as you have experienced, you're nearer to the true reality of what things are.
Yes, exactly. When you enter this dimension, which is in a way experienced as a higher dimension, then the physical reality in a way is a kind of illusion. It's a bubble we live in a lower dimension, whereas outside this bubble there are more dimensions, and that's really in essence where the truth is, where the reality, the fundamental level of the universe exists there. And that's really what people say too. So when many people come back, there is, there's much less desire to be materialistic. There's all of the things that we, our culture kind of chases, desire and greed and all these things become totally unimportant to the near-death experience, because this light, this love, this interconnectedness, this oneness is really experienced as the truth of reality. And the rest, this dimension in a way, is just an illusion in a way.
Yeah,
And that even fits with science, with quantum physics, as we talked about in the beginning, that quantum physics tells us that everything is actually energy. Even though we experience matter as solid, it is in essence, it is energy that is in vibration. It is just vibrating so fast that we see it and experience it as solid matter. But in reality, what we see as the physical world, the physical dimensions of space and time, is not the reality. In essence, there are extra dimensions, and these are made up of energy, which is in vibration. So it does seem as the ant, the little ant, cannot see reality in all its true nature. The same, we are also like a smaller animal that cannot comprehend all of the complexity of the many dimensions of the universe.
I'm sure so, yes. Then we can say that the purer the energy becomes, the higher it is in the scale of vibration. And this is the levels that you've touched when
yes.
you go out of the body, that like the heart would might be called, I call them anyway, sort of the higher vibrations.
Yes, yes, it's like a frequency.
Yes.
And I believe that, in a way, the golden rule is kind of a way, it's a way to live. The deeper we can have an understanding of the golden rule, the deeper we can really enter the heart of love, I mean, the essence of love, which is infinite. So there's a lot of work to be done. So the deeper we can enter this heart of love, the more subtle, the more we are aligned with the true nature of reality, the more we are aligned with this light, with this love. And that's really the frequency where we tune in to this ultimate nature, to this light, to this love. We tune in and we become finer and finer, and what you use the word, we purify ourselves in a way. We purify the elements of the physical dimension, like anger and destructive emotions and things that in a way that go against this love, that keep us unaligned with love, and by transforming these things, evolving out of these negative patterns, we can align ourselves with this true nature of the light, and that's really how we get close to it. And that's, I should say also, we talked before about fear of dying. If we are to stay in this light and be sure to stay there and become one in this light, it is very recommendable to kind of align ourselves with this light. I mean, to live in love and to live in harmony, because that way when we leave this world and we enter the next world, which is love and harmony, then we just naturally become one with it. We merge with it naturally without any problems. But if we, on the other hand, if we have been selfish and ignorant and done many harmful things, then we might have to go through this life review, this negative life review, which is in a way is not as pleasant as being in the light, you could say.
Yeah. Well, you have a wonderful way of describing these sort of higher levels. Have you any personal feelings or any knowledge of what the future holds at the moment for humanity? Because there are a lot of channels that believe we are actually heading for the end of this cycle and that there will be some general upliftment. I mean, have you delved into that side?
Yeah, of course. Of course, I'm very much aware of the Mayan calendar 2012 and all the different all the talk that's going on. And I have to say that even there's talk about Planet X and, you know, the destruction of Earth and stuff. But I have my belief is positive. I believe that when we say the end of time, for me that doesn't necessarily have to mean that it is the destruction of the world we live in. The end of time for me could also mean that we evolve out of the physical dimension. We evolve to the next level. We break through this dimension, and then we become aware of the next level, the next dimension in a way. And this is exactly the same that's going on in physics, in quantum physics. They're actually trying to find these extra dimensions. So just in that perspective, we could say science might break this dimension by discovering extra dimensions. But also in the physical world, in the physical sphere, I mean, politically and such, I also see, I have hope that we're actually going to evolve into an understanding where we're going to create a compassionate and more loving world, where we're going to actually agree that doing war, especially preemptive war, is really harmful to human beings because we're all in a way interconnected. So my hope is that what's going to happen in this end of time is that it's going to be an end of the old paradigm, the old patterns, the old logics that were keeping us in this conflict and destruction. My wish, what I see and what I hope for is that we will evolve out of this what we call creative destruction. We create the world by destroying, we create a new world by destroying the old world. Yeah. For me, that has a problem because we are not respecting the old. I mean, just see the way we are treating old people today. It's not very respectful. Yeah. And other cultures. So I would like to see it evolve from creative destruction into a more harmonious creation, where we create in a harmonious and respectful way. That, for me, would really be a step in evolution for me.
Well, I totally agree with you there. And I thought, in view of your background and what you're interested in, that you would have picked up on what is predicted for the end of this cycle. But, of course, as is often pointed out, the end is but the beginning of something new, which is what you say.
Yes, exactly. And that's really, I mean, if life continues, then there is no end. So it's just a new beginning. It's another step in a way. It's another dimension, we could call it, another level in our evolution. Yes, yeah. I truly believe that.
Well, and I think it's time, Rene, that you told us a bit about your book.
All right.
What is the title of it? And tell us a bit more about your website before I have to close the program.
Yeah, sure. Well, I call the book Awakening After Life, and what I mean with that is really that that was my own experience, that I awakened in a way. And this is really what people tell us, that the who have near-death experience, they say that it is truly an awakening experience. So my perspective is really that what happens after death reveals the true purpose of life, and that's really the essence of the testimonies of the near-death experiences. So that's what I'm doing in the book. And the book, Awakening After Life, it's available on Amazon.com, and you can also have a look on my website, which is the same name as the title of the book, AwakeningAfterLife.com. There's some more information and stuff from the book on the website.
Right. I think you should mention the website just once more in case someone's trying to write this down and can't keep up with it.
Yeah, the website is www.AwakeningAfterLife.com. And that's where the information is about the book. And then the book is available on Amazon.com also.
Have you anything else of interest on your website that would help people?
Well, on this website, it's just about the book, actually. This is it's on the book. I have a personal website where there is a little bit more about me, and there's some articles and interviews and other stuff I have on my personal website. I can also give that out. That's my name, renejorgensen.com. So that's R-E-N-E-J-O-R-G-E-N-S-E-N, renejorgensen.com. And that there will be articles and interviews and other stuff about me on that website.
That's great. Do you have a newsletter or anything of that nature?
No, I don't have that. I don't have quite a following, so I haven't built up that. But actually, if I regularly do email exchange with people, I also have some videos on YouTube, and I interact a lot on the internet. So if any listener has questions for me, has had a similar experience, want to ask something, or any question in any kind, I would be really happy to answer that. My email address is on both websites.
That's great. Yeah.
So just click on that and send me an email with any questions and stuff. I'll be really happy to answer those.
That's wonderful to hear. You've been very easy to interview, and you've had lots of interesting things to say. But I have to close the program 5 minutes before the hour, so that will give me time to make a brief announcement of my guest next Friday. But is there any final comment you would like to say before I have to wish you goodbye?
Well, I guess the final message for me from the near-death experience is really that the foundation of everything is love, and I think that's if we remember that, you know, happiness is really abundant on that foundation. So I think that's really, for me, that's the final conclusion and the final message on the research. It's really it's all about love.
A very interesting interview. Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it very much, Mac. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Maybe in the future, we might pencil your name in and come back and find out what you've been up to and how your book's got on. So thank you very much for being with me. I'm going to announce next week's guest, and then I'll have to close the program. Now, next week I have David Ord, who is a new author. He's recently written a book called Your Forgotten Self. And he is able to bring the scriptures alive with images of those biblical times. And at the same time, he says he has his both feet firmly planted in today's world. So perhaps he's one with both past and present. And he speaks from traditional images of Jesus. The book, he says, is revolutionary because it flies in the face of most religions that are practiced today. And he said it seemed so obvious that Jesus was inclusive, loving, and accepting of all people. So I hope you'll be with me next Friday to listen to what David has to say. And he does believe, apparently, that we are all capable of divine love. So, hope you enjoyed this today's interview. I certainly did. Bless you all, and thank you. I'll say goodbye right here and now. Thank you very much.